Welcome to Bits About Books, the home for conversations with authors of breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. Founders, entrepreneurs, and individual professionals, we all need to keep track of ideas that are helping create our today and tomorrow. Bits About Books will strive to find those books and speak to their authors, go behind the scenes and understand what inspired the authors to write the books that they did and how they went about doing so. Through our conversations, we hope to gain insights that will help us to get the most out of our efforts. I'm your host Shubhanjan Sarkar, founder of PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform where our mission is to make buying easy. Welcome to Bits About Books. Thank you for your time and for joining us in this session. I have a favor to ask. While you continue to listen to the podcast, please leave a comment or rating at iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts from. I personally look at each comment and will give you a shout out to each of you in our following episodes. It means a lot to hear from you. Our guest today is Karin Kopp, and we speak with her about her international bestseller, Biz Dev Done Right, Demystifying the Sales Process and Achieving the Results You Want, which she co-authored with Carl Gold.
Lead generation is a term that comes to mind when people will say, oh, I'm looking for leads. Well, what are you really looking for? Are you looking to create awareness amongst a group of people and have some hand raisers that they want some of your information? Or are you looking to develop a relationship and have a one-to-one meeting with the exact right decision maker? Those two things are different, and yet the terms lead, or the term lead generation, is often used for both of those things.
A best-selling author, internationally recognized speaker, and an expert in business development, Karin is the chief door opener at Kopp Consulting, whose door opener service has helped thousands secure initial meetings at the executive level in almost every major company. Karin can be seen in Inc., Fortune Magazine, Forbes, and Newsweek. She is a faculty member of Vern Harnish's Geisel Growth Institute and is the sales messaging coach for Scaling Up Coaches Worldwide. She co-authored Biz Dev Done Right and wrote The Path to the Cash, the words that you need to bypass those darned prospect objections. Karin received her MBA from NYU's Stern School of Business and her undergraduate degree from Babson College. She has held board positions for the Entrepreneurs Organization, National Speakers Association, and Enterprising Women magazine. Karin is also a member of the Women's President Organization and Women Sales Pros. Karin is the recipient of the New Jersey Biz 50 Best Woman in Business Award, Smart CEO Future 50, and received leadership awards including the Top 25 New Jersey Leading Woman Entrepreneurs, Enterprising Women of the Year Award, the Enterprising Women Top 20 in 20 Years Award, and the Steve Award for Female Entrepreneur of the Year. Now, onto this very actionable session with Karin Kopp. Karin, welcome to Bits About Books. I'm so happy to have you back, albeit in a different show. I actually really was excited to see and read your book. I shouldn't say that I have read it end to end, but I've read it enough to have some thoughts to discuss. So tell us a bit about the work you are doing, and then we'll jump right into the book.
Okay, great. Well, it's great to be back. You make being on the show so easy, so I really appreciate that. I am the chief door opener. People know me as the chief door opener of Kopp Consulting, and we are best known for the door opener service. And that's where our senior level business developers get the first meeting for our clients, especially when the first meeting is at the executive level. And it's usually a big engagement. So this is the hardest part of sales, bar none, is getting the first meeting. But if you don't get the first meeting, you really don't get to do anything else in sales. So that's the majority of the work that we do here. For a few of those clients who don't want to use us for door opening to get the doors open for them, but they want their teams to do a better job, we will train them and let them know what is the best way to get these doors open, along with the kinds of salespeople they really need to have on their team and whether the sales messaging that they're using is going to work in getting the doors open and then closing the sales.
To your book, I mean, Biz Dev Done Right, when you mentioned to me last
you remember, I was like sort of following up with you that let's do this discussion. What sort of triggered, you know, there are several hundred sales books written every year.
Yeah.
And there is every other day, there is a sales book coming out, and nothing wrong with that. It's great. It's a vibrant society. We have 20 million plus people in North America alone. If you look globally, there may be double or triple that number of people. So obviously you need, and it's a very experiential profession. So there's a lot to learn, right? A lot of things are changing. But when you decided, what sort of triggered that thought that I think it's time that I wrote a book?
Yeah. So this was the second book I had written. The first one is called The Path to the Cash, the words you need to bypass those darn prospect objections, which is spiral bound and available through my website, whereas BizDev Done Right is available on Amazon. And so when the idea came up for BizDev Done Right, I was sitting in the office, in my co-author's office. His name is Carl Gould. He's well known in Entrepreneurs Organization and Vistage Speaker, things like that. And we're sitting there and we're just kind of lamenting about our friends in Entrepreneurs Organization, because I'm in Entrepreneurs Organization as well. And we're lamenting about our friends who are on the right path to sales, but don't really think they are. So they stop an effort one step before the finish line. And that's actually one of the chapters in the book. Or they've grown by accident and now they need to grow on purpose, which means they need a different process and they need a different seller, but then they'll choose the wrong seller and they'll lose 6 months to a year, not realizing that it was their fault because they chose the wrong seller in the first place because they didn't know how to choose the right one. And then there are others where, like, from a door opening perspective, we get our clients these phenomenal meetings. And then they always say to me, you get me in the door. I close the sale most of the time. But that sometimes is just when the meeting is from a referral. But when we get them a new meeting, they don't know how to structure that conversation to produce the best possible outcome. But we do. We know what that structure needs to look like. And so now we will educate our clients after the first meeting is booked and before it occurs. We will educate them, no matter how much seniority they have in sales, on how to structure that conversation so they walk away with the next meeting, as opposed to nebulous next steps that may or may not ever get done. So there are certain things in sales that have to go right. And if you only knew to take the right steps, you would avoid taking the wrong ones. So Carl and I were sitting there in his conference room and we're talking about our friends and what they had done. And this one hired the wrong salesperson and that one never followed up. So they didn't get to close. And this one has a proposal that the prospects don't understand. So they don't say yes. And all these different things. And we said, we should write a book. And we were like, okay, well, that's kind of interesting if we write a book with our experience of do this instead of doing that so that you don't lose time and miss opportunities. Wouldn't that be so helpful for these people? Like they never have to hire us. They can just read the book and know what path to be on. And so Carl had written other books before, and he had a process in place for that. So I really credit him for that. If it wasn't for Carl, there probably wouldn't be a book, because I have all these ideas, but I didn't know the path to getting the book done, and he did. And so he took us on this journey, which was really fascinating. He had a ghostwriter, but of course she needs the content. So we made the different chapters that we can talk about if you want. Of what the book is, what were the lessons that people really needed? Like we have one called The Care and Feeding of Your Pipeline, because people don't love their pipeline. They need to love their pipeline, but they don't. So all these different ones, a rock star salesperson and all these other ones that are lessons that people typically get wrong. And then Carl and I recorded each chapter individually, and it was almost like a he said, she said. And so he came with his stories and I came with my stories and some of the most important points for people to know so they would get that right when they were done reading the book. And from there, when I listened to those audios, I said to him, this is gold. This is really gold. But now we're going to turn it into a book. So we handed that to the ghostwriter, who did a very nice job putting it into chapter format, making it readable and digestible. He had a graphic artist who just made some stick figure kinds of thing to kind of lighten the mood, because we're talking about something that's pretty serious. And so he had that. And then we started working on the book cover. And then we brought that to Advantage, who was a hybrid publisher. And they kind of took it to the next level and got it ready for sale. So I think I went a little further than you wanted me to, but
this is great. This is great. So my question is that, let's go back a little. When you sort of sat and you decided the structure of the book, there are two broad parts I can see. One is the mechanism of how BizDev is done. Mm-hmm. Other is focused on team and the kind of people who should be in your team and who should not be in your team and so on. So that's the second part, right? Broadly, there are other chapters which contribute. So obviously there was a bunch of ideas that were in your mind. And then you said, okay, you know what? These things have to go out. These things have to stay. And this should be the progression of the book. How did that come about?
I think we were focused on the areas that we see people getting wrong most often. Mm-hmm. And the first chapter of the book, I tell a story, a personal story of a birthday trip out to California. And I told my family that the breakfast was on the other side of a bike ride. And of course, they're grumbling because they're hungry and they don't want to be on the bike ride, but it was my birthday. So here we go. And we get to this one part over by San Clemente, because we were on the way from Dana Point to San Clemente Pier, where there was a split fork in the road. One side went, it looked like just gravel and nothing, no path, nothing. And the other went, looked like it was on a road, so it looked good. And I said, okay, well, it must be to the left. We didn't ask. That would have been a good idea. We didn't get help. That would have been a better idea. But we just took the left-hand path, which led us all the way into the hills. And we up we went. It took us 45 minutes. My family, I can't even repeat the things they said to me by the time we got to the pier. And then we learned that had we only gone straight, even though it looked like just gravel and no path, there was a path there and it was 10 minutes on flat terrain. And the lesson from that is that sometimes if you ask somebody for help, you will have a straight path to the finish line, as opposed to trying to figure it out yourself, where you may take all sorts of different twists and turns and it'll take you a whole lot longer. And you may be even be leading a group of people down the wrong path, right? And so it starts with that. And so Carl and I, as we embarked on this, we're trying to think of the areas of sales, sales management, sales strategy, hiring, filling your pipeline, all of that, where the people we knew tended to get it wrong most of the time. And it was really painful when they did. And then we broke those into the different chapters. And I remember he has in the book, there's a 9-step process for the sales cycle, for the sales process. And I said to him, in between two of these, there's another process that really needs to be discussed, which is the process of door opening in B2B. Mm-hmm. That is, it's not addressed as intricately as it needs to be as part of this. So we broke that out. And then between steps, I can't remember what, steps, this one and that one, there are several steps in the middle of that. So yeah. People can get the door opening right, because you can't mm-hmm. just assume that they know what to do. These are the steps. If you nail every single one of these, the doors will open. And several of those steps are blind spots for people. So that's kind of how we figured out what the chapters need to be most helpful for people. And a lot of times people will say, when they read the book, they'll say, were you sitting on my shoulder in my office looking at what I was doing for the last year and a half? Because every mistake I've made is written in your book.
That's a great compliment, right? So let's start with the beginning. The beginning was, what is business development?
Right. So it's important actually just to know what that is and how it differs that from marketing, because there is a really blurry area where people think some of sales is sales when actually it's marketing and vice versa. Lead generation is a term that comes to mind when people will say, oh, I'm looking for leads. Well, what are you really looking for? Are you looking to create awareness amongst a group of people and have some hand raisers that they want some of your information? Or are you looking to develop a relationship and have a one-to-one meeting with the exact right decision maker? Those two things are different, and yet the terms lead, or the term lead generation, is often used for both of those things. But yeah, when companies go to the market to ask for other companies to help them, they need to use the right terms, or they may get something and sign up for something which was not their intention and not at all what they need at all. So sales is really the process of generating revenue and helping someone by doing that, right? That's really what that is. And if people get that wrong, then they're on the wrong path. Right. So there is a lot of coaches. Coaches are a great example. So there's a lot of coaches out there. They just want to help people. And I coach an international coaching organization in sales. Like, I coach the coaches on how to grow their practices, and they love to help people. And one of the things I say to them is that, yes, and you could be as altruistic as you want, and you can help everybody. But if you want to eat or go on vacation, then you need to be helping more people who will willingly spend time and money on a coach to help them solve their problems. Because if they don't fall into that category, you may not make enough money to eat or go on vacation. And that's a big light bulb moment for a lot of those people. So we help our clients understand, how do you approach the market in a way that helps you to talk to people who are more likely to spend money on your products and services versus the general masses? What would happen for your business if you were able to identify who those people were and spend more time with them? Then you would get more yeses and more people who would pay for your products and services. So the sales in the definition is generating revenue.
Yeah. Yeah. So I will skip a few chapters, touch upon a chapter down the line, and then come back here. So one of the chapters you wrote about messaging, and yeah, the chapter was about why your messaging sucks. So let's talk a bit about that. So, I mean, I think I can connect it with what you just said, that when we are actually going out and trying to talk about what we do or what we offer, a lot of time what we are telling is not what our prospect is hearing. And that's,
yes, that's
because the way we are saying it, right?
Yes.
So let's touch upon that and let's hear your thoughts on that.
How long do you have? Well, a couple of 30,000 foot points about sales messaging, not just any messaging, because marketing messaging and sales messaging are different. They are not out of alignment with each other, but they are different. I will say that the person with the best words wins. I've seen it over and over again. It may not even be the company with the best offering that wins. But if the company that doesn't have the best offering has the best words, they will win. So if you are a company that has a great offering and you deserve to win, spend time on your sales messaging so you make sure that in a performance moment, you are able to come out with the right sales messaging that will land with the person who hears it. And that will change depending on where you are in the relationship with the prospect, because sales messaging and sales is situational. Is this somebody new? You've not met them before. You're just meeting them. Is it somebody you've spoken to many times? Is it somebody you've known for 10 years? Where is that person in the buying journey? And all of that will change. The other, another point at 30,000 feet is that people always talk about why they're different. And I'm here to tell you, nobody cares. Nobody cares why you're different. Nobody, not one person, not in sales, maybe marketing, I don't know, but I focus on sales. Nobody cares why you're different. They only care why you're of more value to them. And if you can articulate that in language that's relevant and compelling, you win. And if you can't, you lose. If you cause a disconnect, which is what you were talking about a minute ago, if what you say causes a disconnect with the person who hears it, you've lost in that moment the ability to help that person get from point A to point B in his or her thinking. And that's really important. So people don't tend to really think much about what they say. They're not deliberate with their word choice, but they can be if they slow down just a little bit and think about, what does that person need to hear? Why is that person even here? So that you can help that person understand why getting to the next place in your relationship with them is going to be the best decision that that person makes all week. And that has to do with sales language. Here's an example, and I'll go back to this, the coaching organization that I was talking about. We created all of their sales messaging from getting in the door through closing the sale. And when I created the first, we called it the sales messaging toolkit. When I created the first one for them, it was called prospecting. And they all said, oh, we don't need to prospect. And I said, really? Because that word for them was a disconnect. And I'm like, really? Do you ever need to find new clients and centers of influence? They said, all the time. Like, okay, we're going to call this section finding new clients and centers of influence. Welcome to sales messaging. Because I had to call it something that was meaningful. Hmm. There's a section in there that's called calling people you don't know. Because if I said cold calling, they would all say, oh, I never cold call. And then I say, well, did you ever need to call somebody you don't know? And they say all the time. Great. That's what the section's called. So you have to call it something that's in, that's meaningful to the other person. Another example, which I would call like vanilla messaging because it's meaningless, is when somebody says, we're a boutique agency. Well, what that means to the agency could be very different and negative to the prospect. You don't know that that's a positive to the prospect. The prospect may just mean that that means that the agency can't service their needs. And that's not at all what the person who's selling meant, but that's how it landed. So that avoiding that disconnect is really important. And I'm going to stop there. And I know in our last interview, we did talk about the gap messaging, the cop gap method of sales messaging. So I can go into that if you want.
It's time for a short break. Stay with us. After the break.
Closing is a simple executional detail of business development well done. If you're having a lot of trouble closing, usually the big offender is that it was never the right target to begin with. So in an organization where there are multiple decision makers and you go in too low, you have to get from that place and all the influencers and work really hard to get to the person who is the decision maker. Our approach is top down. Top down, go in at the top. Even if that's not the person who is the one figuring out whether this is going to work, but that is the person who needs to sign off on this.
You are listening to a Business Podcast Network original. Podcasting is the fastest growing content marketing opportunity, which is untapped. We can help you craft your audio strategy and help leverage the wide reach and easy streaming capability that the smartphone penetration provides. It is easy, it is powerful, and personal. Talk to us to find out how podcasting can help you build your brand and reach out to your targets like never before. Write to us at bpn@bizcast.in. That is bpn@bizcast.in. Business Podcast Network. Podcasts end to end.
Welcome back. I'm Shubhanjan Sarkar, your host for Bits About Books and founder of PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. Let's dive right back into the episode where we left it.
Do we overrate closing? I mean,
that's a good question.
Yeah, I mean, this is something, I mean, we talk, oh no, this guy's a closer. I mean, he's like, like sort of a rock star, and we can go into that chapter from here. But essentially, we sort of put somebody on a pedestal because, oh, this guy closes. I have a theory, but I'll come to that separately. But I would like to know what you think.
A couple of things. The first thing is closing is a simple executional detail of business development well done. If you're having a lot of trouble closing, usually the big offender is that it was never the right target to begin with. So in an organization where there are multiple decision makers and you go in too low, let's say, you have to get from that place and all the influencers and work really hard to get to the person who is the decision maker. Our approach is top down, which works in most situations. I want to say all situations, but most situations. Top down, go in at the top, even if that's not the person who is the one figuring out whether this is going to work, but that is the person who needs to sign off on this. And then we use what we would call a circle back technique, where you start at the top with the 30,000 foot of why this would be so helpful to this individual and the organization. And even if that person says, this is a great idea, but I need you to talk to Tom, Dick, and Harry before we can go further on this, then you get that referral. It's like an implied endorsement to those people to have that conversation. But every step of the way, you're circling back to the original high-level person and telling them, I spoke to Tom. This is what we discussed. Here are our next steps. I'm talking to Harry next. And the same with the other two. And any point in time where you get stuck, you can always go back to the original person because that person's involved every step of the way. Then when it comes to signing off, it's simple because this person has been kept informed and is involved. So that is a simpler approach. If you started at the lower level, maybe that person wasn't the right person in the first place, which makes closing so difficult, right? And so aside from it being so difficult, sometimes in order to get things closed when you talk to the wrong person, you have to cut your prices, you have to walk away from margin, you have to throw in all sorts of extra value, not just because the other person is a good negotiator, but because it wasn't really the right person to begin with, right? So that's the first point about closing. But you talked about individuals too. Like there are some people who are so great at closing, and I agree with that. There are some people who are so great at tying up the loose ends and then just bringing it to fruition because that's the part of the sale that they really like. They're very good at that. There's a different cadence to that part of the sale than there is to the work of getting the meeting. And I often say these are different people. Like in the world of sales hunters, one of the blind spots, and this is a chapter in the book too, is that people, the leaders who are hiring, will think a hunter is a hunter is a hunter. I just need a hunter. Well, there are different kinds of hunters in the world of hunters. So in our world, the people who are great at the meeting and closing the sale, we call them the closers. That's the terminology we use. But then there are other people who are intuitively great. They just have it in their DNA to open up the new conversations at the right levels and get those people so interested that they want to have the meeting. We call them the openers. It's rare in my experience to find one person who's equally great at both opening and closing and loves one as much as the other, right? You may have a closer who is a good opener, but they don't really like to do that part of the job. And so what will happen there is peaks and valleys in revenue creation because they want to focus on the close and they're often compensated to do that. But then they don't have enough in the top of their funnel all the time so that when the hunter who's the closer is done closing and then starts to look at the top of the funnel, it's empty. And then they have to start that work. That's why having the door opener service from our company is really helpful, because we are policing the top of that funnel and we're making sure that we're always feeding the exact right meetings into the top of the funnel for these closers, so they don't have to break their rhythm with what they're so very good at. But as I said, it's a blind spot for people where they'll hire one person to do both. And, you know, then I share what happens. That's my philosophy on closing.
Let's talk a little bit about the pipeline, about managing the pipeline, nurturing it, building it so that it delivers what it is supposed to deliver.
So I'll break it into getting the first meeting and then beyond that meeting. So the first part that's so important that people don't spend enough time on is really identifying the prospects who need to know them for a particular reason. Like, there's something going on for these prospects that makes them have more urgency than other prospects in having an initial conversation and then moving forward. So people will target too wide. And then there's a lot of wasted time when people target too wide. Other mistakes people make is that when they're not comfortable reaching out to people they don't know, they'll just spend time at conferences and trade shows and networking where they're meeting a lot of people who will never become clients for them, never. And they'll spend time there because that is their comfortable shoe. But it's not a very strategic approach. It's not efficient when it comes to the sales process, but that's what they're comfortable doing. Maybe that person is the wrong person for that job, right? So there is that component of it, is selecting the exact right people and then spending your time with those people so those people understand why taking steps with you is going to be a great decision for them, right? So that's the first part. Let's now assume, after I said that, people are spending time with the right people and they're saying the right things to get those right meetings. What happens after that? So that's the follow-up part of it. If somebody has an immediate need, most people are pretty good about that. they don't always do the right things in the proposal process. That's another part of this. But they pretty much know, okay, I'm going to have another meeting with them. I'm going to submit a proposal and we're going to start negotiating price and we get over to the close. Like, that part of it is easier for them. The harder part is when somebody doesn't have an immediate need and there are more of those than people want. And especially with salespeople, because their compensation may be heavily skewed to the close of the sale. If somebody is in the relationship building mode, they have a need, but not right now, they tend to get ignored in favor of prospects who have a more immediate need, even if that need is smaller, even if that need comes at a smaller margin for the company, because that's part of the salesperson's compensation. And so they're naturally going to focus there and not on the building of the relationships. But when I talk to people, and I say to them, when you're standing out 2 years from now, looking back, what do you think is going to happen for your pipeline? And they'll tell all sorts of stories about somebody they met who became their best client 2 years later. And so then I say, okay, so help me understand the math. That person became your client 2 years later, and you probably did some relationship building along the way. So now let's talk about your pipeline for the prospects who you met who we're not quite ready to move forward for some good reasons, right? Not for the bad reasons, but for the good reasons. What are you doing with those people? And a lot of times, if they're not ready to move forward in the timeframe that the seller wants, and sometimes in the timeframe that the seller's management wants, they will ignore that pipeline. And so what does that do? It leaves these people who are now educated, the right people who are now educated on why they need to solve a problem, open to the competitors who call them and do a better job with follow-up than the person who may have originally had that meeting who didn't follow up, didn't have a process, or followed up with something meaningless, like checking in. What does that do? That doesn't build a relationship. So people don't really have a process for this, for making sure that they're caring and feeding their pipeline over time. So one of Carl's lines is customer now or customer later. And I agree with that, as long as you've done a really good job being selective about targeting when it comes to sales.
So it is also to do with our, I mean, I think you mentioned it in your book, it's also to do with our requirement for meeting this quarterly quotas, which is part of the leadership problem as well. I mean, we could sort of connect them and talk about it. So this instant gratification bit that you talk about in the book, it is sort of feeding this whole process where anything long term is sort of no, I can't do that because too much investment of time. And the problem with that approach, and tell me if that is correct, this thought. The problem is that we are all landing up in the red ocean, right? So my competitor is also, for his instant gratification or her instant gratification, going after the same customers who are theoretically ready to buy today, which is where the price and, you know, giving in other stuff and so on and so forth comes in. But essentially, it is lowering the margin, not letting us have long-term relationship, and possibly pushing some people that you are educating into the arms of the competitor.
Yes. And yes, that's exactly right. We had a client at one time, a big company, you would know them, we're supporting their sales force. And when we got started, they told me that it was an 18-month sales cycle. 6 months into our engagement, the CFO of that company says, "Where's my ROI? Why aren't there any closed sales?" And I said, "Well, if you have an 18-month sales cycle and we're 6 months in, and you don't meet everybody on day one, why would you think there would be closed sales if 18 months is your sales cycle?" And it's hard for management to understand this. And I see it over and over again that management may fire a sales team that's doing exactly the right things, but the sales cycle has to take its course. We were hired by a tier two accounting firm. And they also said the same thing, long sales cycle, at least a year, maybe more. And it was very similar, that they wanted something to close within 6 months. And I said the same thing, help me understand the math. But for that person to sell it to his senior leadership, he had to make promises. I said, "Well, here's the way to do that. If you want something to close, then chunk it down. And sell something that's really small, that the person who you're meeting with has the ability to sign off on without asking for any other input from anybody else. And you will have a closed sale. You can do that in 6 months, but only if you change your offering." And they didn't want to do that. So as the Venn diagram goes, how do you create the overlapping circles to get a winner? You're setting yourself up for failure. Right. And a lot of people do that. They set themselves up for failure. And then when they experience that, they might have been on exactly the right track, which is why we have that chapter, "Don't give up one step before the finish line."
Right.
Because that's what happens. They'll throw away an entire pipeline of great relationships because they didn't close in what was an unreasonable sales cycle time. And we have that chapter, Sales Cycleonomics, to help people understand that, because even if you ask them what that is and they define it for you, then when they go to pursue a sales initiative, whether they're hiring externally or they're hiring their own sales team, they're creating benchmarks that are impossible to meet unless they change their offering, which they typically don't want to do.
This is so... so valuable, actually. And this whole idea that you should be able to chunk your offering down to simpler bits, which can be sold quickly. And then also gives you a sort of a segue into the organization to build up the relationship, right?
That's right. That's another way to do it. And a lot of companies will do it. We had one client, and I don't know that this story is in the book, but we were getting this client's company in with VPs of marketing in big pharma. And they sold something that cost $300,000. Part of it was a service, part of it was a SaaS platform. And whenever they did that, the VP got really excited about it, totally behind it, wanted it. And then what happens when it's $300,000? Well, the VP of marketing says, now you have to go to procurement and you have to get it through procurement. Procurement didn't see the value that the VP saw because they look at things a different way and said, we have agencies of record that can do this. Thanks anyway. And that's where they would get stuck. Mm-hmm. We got in a room, we have a whiteboard, we're figuring this out, and we're coming up with different ideas. What do we do to minimize the amount of times we're facing this objection so that this objection doesn't become a roadblock? I call this the objection makeover. I have a whole workshop on this for people. And so when we did that, we identified if she was able to break her offering into three pieces, and the first one was $100,000, a VP of marketing in a company the size we were going after was able to sign off on that himself or herself without going to procurement. That came up in the course of our brainstorming. So I said, well, if that's true, can you break it into three sections? And where the first section comes in, gets signed off on by the person who you're meeting with. And then after that, they have to use you for the second and the third. They'd never thought of that before. And they were able to restructure their offering, sell it that way without going to procurement, and they removed their biggest objection, right? But people don't think of it like this. So even sometimes companies that are hiring a sales VP, if that sales VP is not a strategist and doesn't look at it this way, that sales VP may never come up with a solution. That sales VP may go through seller after seller after seller because they're not making their numbers because they hit this objection. When if they only looked at what is the roadblock and what do we do to remove the roadblock, you might think it's a seller, but it's not. It's coming from a different area.
And somehow I think that an analysis is not done where you are flexible enough to restructure your offering. I think the analysis is about where we are getting stuck, who is creating the roadblock, try to overcome that instead of looking inward and seeing, is there something that we can do to sort of help it
along? Well, you know what, from my perspective, and this is just my experience, most people don't do that, what you just said. They just fire the salesperson.
Yeah.
That's what they do. And then it will take 3 to 6 months to hire a salesperson and make sure that that person is not just producing, but onboarded enough to be talking to the clients and contributing, right? And then you may spend another 6 months to a year until you realize that that person is not going to be able, especially in a long sales cycle. But people don't go back and figure out, was it the salesperson? Was it the strategy? Was it the target? Was it the message? They don't do that.
Yeah.
Because the leaders don't know to do that, right? So they'll just fire the salespeople and then they'll do it again 2 years later, 3 years later, same problem, because they never fix the right problem.
Let's talk a bit about the team and the hiring and the training that is required. And of course, firing people faster than the 12 months, because it may not be, as we said, it may not be the salesperson's fault at all. Maybe he just doesn't fit into what you're selling or whatever. Mostly, you know, firing is because of wrong hiring, not because the person was wrong.
That's right. And that's the leader's fault.
Yeah.
That's right. You know, but what I say is first identify what you need, right? If you're only going to hire one salesperson, we already established that any one hunter is not equally great in opening and closing. I think everybody would agree with that. If you have an empty pipeline or you're creating a brand new market or you're going after a new territory and there's no prior relationships there at all, and the seller is going to be required to do that and may or may not have those relationships, and that's actually a separate subject altogether, but a subsegment of it, then you need an opener. You need somebody who could figure that out and open relationships where relationships didn't exist before. I would go to somebody who skews more to the opener. right? Because if you choose a closer, and this is a common form of mishire, if you choose the closer to open up a brand new territory, new market, that person is going to be like a fish out of water. And then you're going to be 3 months in, 6 months in, and you're like, well, why don't we have more prospects in the funnel? Why don't we do, why is this? This, there's not enough proposals out there. You need to contact more people, go call more people, email more people. Like, why? Well, why? Because the person doesn't want to do it. It's not their favorite part of sales, right? So they'll do it for a little bit and then they'll get some people in the pipeline, but it may not be enough. Yeah. And then they have to go back and do the thing that they don't like. Better that you hire somebody who embraces that part of sales and let that person go to town, because that person will fill the top of the funnel. Now, they may not be as strong as the closer in getting the prospect through, but at least you'll have prospects. So you may have somebody in your organization who can support that person in getting the prospects through the funnel. But if you hire a closer and you really needed an opener, the leader wants to jump out the window in about 6 months. And they might do things like, they'll put in incentives. They'll be like, I'm going to give you X amount for a meeting. I'm going to give you this. I'm going to give you that, which will create a very short blip of activity. But then they're going to go back to not wanting to do it, right? I've seen performance improvement plans where the leadership will put somebody on a performance improvement plan. Well, what does that do? That means you're paying them to go look for another job because they know that's what's coming, right? Mm-hmm. So why do that part? The leader hired the wrong person. So identify really what you need that person to do over the next 6 months and hire the right person for that job. If you can hire two people, I'd hire somebody who's great at opening. I don't mean an SDR. Like an SDR is a low-level person. That's a person just out of college, 2 years experience, or an actor with a good voice. Mom likes to talk on the phone, has a little bit of time in the afternoon. Like this is a lower level person. If you're trying to get in at the executive level, the SDR is not going to be able to hold his own or her own with a CEO or anybody in the C-suite. That's a mismatch. So you're going to need a senior level person opening up a senior level door for you and then passing it off to somebody who is going to be your closer. That is really when the magic happens. And so if people don't have that in their organizations, they can outsource it to a company like ours. But if somebody chooses to do that, you need to be careful the kind of company you choose, because many of them are hiring low-level people. So if you're looking to get in at that executive level, make sure there's a match there when it comes to the salespeople. Likewise, if let's say you have lots of clients and you just need more from them, and I'm not talking land and expand because that's prospecting as well, but you just need more from the clients you have, then you're going to need a farmer. And people, those are plentiful. There's a lot more farmers than there are hunters. But in the world of hunters, there's many more closers than there are openers. The opener is the hardest hunter to hire.
Yeah, and I guess that's the most critical component of the entire process. I mean, if you're not opening enough, you're obviously right. Not closing enough. I mean,
exactly. And people will tell you that, like they'll tell you that. But then when they go to actually do that, they do the wrong thing. They do what they know. They do what's comfortable, but it's not necessarily what's going to be successful.
Yeah, as I said, I mean, I think the whole focus somehow of the sales process is in the closing, because that's what sort of is connected. We sort of understand that piece that, oh, if I close, I get revenue. So it's sort of by association has become extremely important, but we are ignoring the real stuff, which leads you to that, right?
And an easier close, because remember, like my philosophy is that closing a sale is a simple executional detail of business development. Well done.
Yeah.
So if you do the beginning parts correctly, closing is just obvious to the prospect.
Okay. So last one, the fun question and the fun chapter at the end, what biz development is not?
Well, we talked a lot about what business development is not when we were on this interview. but it's not doing it wrong. It's not assuming that you have a relationship with someone of trust when you really don't. It's not making that assumption and jumping three steps ahead when the buyer is not with you on that journey, right? It's not that. It's not a spray and pray where you're just doing a lot of activity, but it's not meaningful activity. Some of the things that I'm talking about now are new metrics for sales. Those aren't in the book. That content actually came later. But instead of monitoring how many meetings you have, monitor how many second meetings you have. Because if you monitor the number of second meetings you have from the first meetings, it means you met with the right person. It means that meeting set up value for the prospect. And it means you asked for a second meeting. So why not measure that instead? Right? So it's not doing a lot of meaningless activities that get you nowhere. It's doing things that are deliberate, saying things that are deliberate so that you can achieve the outcome that you want in a way that is the best decision for the buyer too.
Bits About Books is brought to you by PitchLink, the buyer-seller engagement platform. PitchLink makes buying easy by enabling high-quality engagement between buyers and sellers through its presentation and discussion modules. Sellers create customized sales narratives using sales collaterals and personal videos, and reach out to prospects through a non-intrusive, buyer-qualified engagement. PitchLink requires no installation or download and holds the entire repository of sales collaterals and buyer-seller conversations. Talk to us to know more about how you can engage with customers without intrusion. Call us on 99021-631-32.
You know, going back to the story is that if you're struggling with any part of this, and sometimes people aren't even struggling, but they just wish they had more and they can't figure out how to release the constraint because they don't know what the constraint is that's preventing them from having more, get some help. People can reach out to me. I have these conversations all the time. Sometimes it results in people who need door opener and other times it doesn't. But if you can release your one to two biggest constraints in your sales process, then you can have more. You can have as much as you want. Even people who have a lot of sales, they still need efficiencies in their sales process because their company is busy absorbing the sales that they just got. Right. So everybody has constraints along the way. If people can just release those, then the sky's the limit, really.
Wonderful. Karen, thank you so much. I really loved the previous session. I love this session. I think that I can talk. I really mean it. I can talk to you for many hours, actually.
Well, again, you're equally easy to talk to. So thank you for that.
Yeah, it is a pleasure, and I really look forward to having more conversations.
Me too. Have a great day.
Thank you.
We have a fantastic lineup over the next couple of episodes with great conversations on breakthrough books. Subscribe in your favorite podcast app so you do not miss a single episode. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today on Bits About Books, where we talk to authors about breakthrough books on sales, marketing, and business. We hope this conversation helped inform and motivate as we all navigate a rapidly changing business environment. For us, these are enlightening conversations enriched with knowledge and expertise. We encourage you to go out and buy the book to learn firsthand and implement some of the great ideas we discussed today. We hope to have you with us again in the next exciting episode of Bits About Books. If you liked what you heard, subscribe to the show in your favorite podcast platforms like iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever else you get your podcasts from, and give us a rating while you are at it.
This BizCast original podcast is produced for PitchLink, the next generation buyer-seller engagement platform, where the mission is to make buying easy. Hosted by Subhanjan Sarkar and produced by Rajiv Aditya. See you next time and have a wonderful day.